For most of us, when the lights flicker at home or like the power grid goes completely dark during a storm, it is just a massive immediate annoyance.
Right, yeah, it's a huge pain.
Best case scenario, you're resetting the microwave clock and hunting for flashlights. Worst case, you are throwing out an entire fridge full of expensive groceries.
Yeah, exactly.
We are so conditioned to look at a failing power grid and see nothing but a problem. But what if someone looked at that exact same failing grid, those exact same flickering lights, and saw a multi-million dollar gold mine?
It's a complete inversion of how we normally approach infrastructure, really. I mean, usually stability is the ultimate goal. You want the line to be boring.
Right, boring is good.
Exactly. But what we are all looking at today completely flips that logic on its head. In this model, the instability of the system is actually the primary fuel.
And that brings us to the mission of today's deep dive. We've got our hands on a fascinating stack of highly confidential sounding internal strategy reports, business plans, massive amounts of telemetry data from a venture studio and industrial conglomerate called DeReticular. Our goal today is to decode how their global initiative, this massive undertaking they ominously call Project Octagon, is literally weaponizing power grid volatility. And they aren't just doing this to get rich, right?
No, not at
They
all.
are using it to fund a worldwide network of autonomous off-grid communities.
What is genuinely fascinating here is the sheer physical scale of the paradigm shift these documents outline. Before they even pitch a product, they spend pages diagnosing a fundamental global condition they call centralized fragility.
Decentralized
Right,
fragility.
that's our current reality. Think about it. You rely on a power plant that might be hundreds of miles away.
Oh, yeah.
If a single tree branch falls on a critical transmission line or, a transformer blows, your entire neighborhood goes dark. So their proposed solution is a hard pivot away from that interconnected vulnerability towards something they call island mode.
Island mode. I really love the visual of that term.
It's highly descriptive of the operational state, honestly. Island mode is the physical and digital ability for a community or a massive factory or an industrial data center to instantly, seamlessly sever its ties with the centralized grid
Wow.
and then sustain itself indefinitely. It means no blackouts, no relying on external fragile supply chains, just total localized permanent independence.
Okay, let's unpack this because it is one thing to write total independence on a whiteboard,
True.
right?
Yeah.
And it's another thing to physically build it. Before we get into the hyper-advanced AI and the global scope of Project Octagon, we have to talk about where DeReticular decided to run their ultimate physical stress test.
Right, the proving grounds.
Yeah. They didn't pick some easy, stable environment to baby their technology. They went straight for the belly of the beast
Yeah.
to combat what they call linear fragility.
Right, and linear fragility is exactly what it sounds like. A line is only as strong as its weakest point. And global grids are getting hammered right now.
Oh, absolutely.
You have aging mid-century equipment, you have an influx of intermittent renewables, wind and solar that surge and drop unpredictably. And on top of that, you have increasingly extreme weather events. The system is just bucking under the strain.
So, to test their tech against all of that, DeReticular set up an initial facility called Node 5. In the internal documents, it's playfully referred to as the Energy Student or the Urban Energy Lab. Now, originally, reading through their early memos, this lab was supposed to be built in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Right, the cold twin.
Exactly. They called it the cold twin. The idea was to test their systems against brutal, freezing northern winters. But they completely scrapped that plan. Instead, they strategically relocated Node 5 to Fort Worth, Texas, right near the historic stockyards.
Which was a highly calculated pivot. They didn't just want bad weather. I mean, they wanted a chaotic market. And the Texas energy grid, which is managed by ERCOT, is an entirely unique beast.
Yeah, totally.
First, it is heavily deregulated, meaning wholesale electricity prices fluctuate wildly in real time based purely on supply and demand. Second, it is quite literally an island grid. It is largely disconnected from the rest of the United States.
So when things go sideways in Texas, they can't just run a massive extension cord over the border to borrow power from Louisiana or New Mexico. They're stuck with what they have.
Precisely. That physical isolation combined with those extreme weather events, like, say, a deep freeze that knocks offline natural gas plants, or an intense summer heat wave, it creates unbelievable volatility.
I can imagine.
The internal data shows that prices on the ERCOT grid can actually drop to negative $100 per megawatt hour.
Wait, negative, meaning the grid is literally paying you to consume electricity.
Yes, exactly. If the wind is howling across West Texas at 3 a.m., but nobody is awake to run their appliances, there is a massive oversupply.
Oh, wow.
The grid must stay perfectly balanced at all times, so it literally pays large consumers to soak up that excess power. But flip the script during a crisis, say, a freeze where generation fails but everyone needs heat, and the price spikes to a legally capped maximum of $5,000 per megawatt hour.
Okay, let me put it this way. They essentially moved their lab from a calm kiddie pool to a massive, unpredictable wave pool.
Mm-hmm.
Because if their technology can survive the Texas hard mode waves, I mean, it can survive anywhere on Earth.
Yeah, that's a great analogy.
They aren't running from the volatility. They planted their flag right in the middle of it.
This raises an important question, though. Having a fluctuating market full of massive waves is one thing. But how does a system actually capture those specific price swings?
Right.
The electrical grid changes state in milliseconds. Human energy traders sitting at a desk with a cup of coffee are far, far too slow to react to a sudden, momentary spike in electrical demand. By the time a human clicks sell, the opportunity is already gone. And that is exactly where DeReticular takes the humans completely out of the loop.
Hmm.
To surf that wave pool at millisecond speeds, they rely on this autonomous technological architecture they call their sovereign stack.
Mm-hmm.
And they break it down into three specific layers: the muscle, the motion, and the mind.
We need to look closely at the mechanics of those layers. If the goal is island mode, you know, true independence, you need to generate your own power when the public grid collapses. That is the muscle.
Right.
At node 5, they use a specific technology operated by a partner entity called AgriDot Energy.
This part is wild to me, and it really explains why they built this lab right next to the Fort Worth stockyards. AgriDot uses livestock biomass, which is a polite way of saying massive amounts of agricultural animal waste.
Yeah.
And they run it through something called plasma gasification.
Right. And it is crucial to understand here that plasma gasification is not incineration. They aren't just burning manure in a furnace.
Exactly. That's what I initially thought. But the documents describe it more like a contained lightning storm.
Yeah.
They use electrical arcs to superheat this waste to thousands of degrees until it literally breaks down at a molecular level. It strips the waste into a synthetic gas, which is then used to generate continuous carbon negative power.
It's incredible tech.
They are processing 10 tons of this a day to create a permanent baseload. It doesn't stop when the sun goes down or the wind stops blowing. It is always on.
That permanent power is the foundation. Then you have the motion, which is managed by an autonomous logistics fleet called curb cars. If the grid is down, human-driven supply chains usually fail. Gas stations lose power. Delivery trucks stop.
Right. Everything freezes.
Curb cars ensures the physical fuel that biomass keeps moving into the facility autonomously. But the true engine of this entire operation is the mind.
The mind. The brain of the operation. This is their proprietary software, RIOS, which stands for Rural Infrastructure Operating System.
Mm.
And in Node 5, RIOS operates a specific AI agent that they simply call the Trader.
Right.
The Trader runs an algorithm called the Spark Spread. But I need you to break this down for me, because when I hear Trader, I picture a guy looking at a stock ticker on Wall Street. What is an AI actually looking at on a power grid?
Well, the Trader AI is constantly millisecond by millisecond calculating a specific value differential. It is comparing the current financial value of digital compute against the real-time value of physical electricity on the Texas grid.
Okay, let me make sure I'm following the physics of this. When power on the Texas grid is cheap, or hitting that negative pricing where they're being paid to take it, the Trader AI buys up all that power.
Right.
It uses some of it to charge up massive industrial battery walls, these huge Tesla megapacks they have on site. But it also uses that cheap power to spin up what they call sovereign Sentry servers.
Yeah, the Sentry servers.
And these are incredibly high-density server racks doing heavy, complex AI model training.
Correct. They are turning cheap electricity into highly valuable digital work. But the magic happens when the grid state changes. Say a massive heat wave hits Fort Worth at 4:00 p.m. Everyone gets home from work and turns on their air conditioning.
The grid starts to strain.
Exactly. Mm. The grid strains, and the price of electricity suddenly skyrockets toward that $5,000 cap.
And that's when a sub-agent of the AI, this air-gapped system called the industrial foreman, violently kicks in.
Violently is a really good word for it, because it is an instantaneous physical pivot. the industrial foreman instantly suspends all of that heavy digital compute. It effectively hits pause on the server racks, dropping the facility's power consumption to near zero.
Wow.
Simultaneously, it triggers the inverters on those massive battery walls, mm-hmm. instantly discharging all that stored power back onto the public grid, selling it at the absolute maximum price.
I just want to pause on how insane that is.
Yeah.
It's like a massive profitable factory autonomously deciding to abruptly halt its entire assembly line just so it can sell the electricity it's about to use.
Pretty much.
Because for that specific microsecond, the raw electricity is worth more than the actual product they are making.
It is the ultimate expression of dynamic resource allocation. And to understand why DeReticular is winning here, we have to look at the latency.
Okay.
DeReticular physically owns this infrastructure. The batteries, the plasma gasification unit, the servers, they are sitting right next to each other in Fort Worth. They aren't relying on a public cloud like Amazon Web Services in Virginia to run their AI. By processing the algorithm directly at the edge, literally feet away from the batteries, they bypass internet routing latency.
So it's like trying to win a buzzer-beating trivia game, but the Wall Street hedge funds are playing via satellite delay,
mm-hmm.
and DeReticular is sitting directly inside the actual buzzer.
Well,
they beat the bankers to the punch every single time. So what does this all mean? They've essentially built a decentralized, automated ATM. And the financial projections in these documents are wild. It's so successful that they're graduating Node 5 out of its research phase and spinning it into a standalone commercial division called Reticular Energy Intelligence, or DEI.
The numbers in the DEI business plan require a double take. I mean, they outline an initial capital expenditure of just $8 million for the Fort Worth expansion.
Wait, only $8
million? Yeah, just $8 million. With that relatively small footprint, they are targeting a 35% annual yield purely on their battery capacity. And that isn't a speculative guess, you know. It is strictly back-tested against historical ERCOT volatility.
But wait, the scale gets so much bigger. By year 10, this DEI division is projecting over $500 million in annual net profit.
Yeah.
$500 million. How is that even physically possible from a facility in a stockyard?
Well, they achieve that scale through three very specific overlapping revenue streams. First is what they call the treasury. That's the pure energy arbitrage we just detailed.
Okay.
Buying power when it's cheap or negative and dumping it back onto the grid when it spikes.
Okay, got it. The second stream is called the peacekeeper, which is fascinating because they get paid just to be ready. It involves providing what the industry calls ancillary services.
Right.
Specifically, frequency regulation directly to ERCOT.
This requires understanding a bit of grid physics. The AC power grid operates at a very specific frequency, 60 hertz in the U.S. If demand suddenly spikes, that frequency can drop to, say, 59.9 hertz.
Doesn't sound like much.
It sounds tiny, but if it drops too far, the entire grid collapses. So the Peacekeeper algorithm monitors that wave. When it senses a wobble before a blackout even occurs, the batteries autonomously pulse massive bursts of power into the grid to stabilize the wave back to 60 hertz.
Wow.
ERCOT pays DEI a massive steady premium just for acting as a localized high-speed shock absorber.
And then there's the third stream, which they call the Oracle. But before we get into the data side of the Oracle, I have to jump in here with some serious skepticism.
Okay, let's hear it.
Hold on. You're telling me Texas regulators are just going to sit by while a rogue AI prints $500 million off their grid's physical instability? At some point, the politicians or the grid operators are going to step in, change the rules, and say, actually, you can't use an AI to high-frequency trade our electricity anymore. Doesn't this whole operation just get regulated into the ground overnight?
It is the most obvious vulnerability, sure. But if we look closely at the strategic risk mitigation section of the business plan, DeReticular has designed the system specifically to neutralize regulatory threats.
Oh.
The answer lies in the fundamental premise of island mode. If ERCOT changes the rules, cap the prices, or the environment becomes entirely hostile, DEI doesn't go bankrupt. They simply sever the connection.
Oh, they just pull the plug on the grid.
Exactly. They stop selling power outward and immediately pivot to using 100% of the generated and stored power internally. They use it to run incredibly high-value, uninterrupted AI compute for clients, or they ramp up the plasma gasification system to produce physical transportable fuels.
That makes sense.
They are never trapped by the centralized system because they own the means of production.
They can just take their ball and go home. That is the ultimate leverage. If you don't need the grid's permission to survive, the grid can't dictate your business model.
Right.
Okay, so that brings us to the third revenue stream, the Oracle, which is all about selling data. To grasp why this specific data is so valuable, we have to zoom way out from Fort Worth and look at the actual planetary scale of Project Octagon.
Right. D-Reticular isn't just hoarding $500 million in Texas. That money, which they refer to internally as the capital geyser, is the funding mechanism for a global network of 8 sovereign nodes.
8 of them.
Yeah. Node 5 in Texas is officially designated as the university for this entire mesh.
And here's where the tech gets incredibly futuristic. They use something called a federated learning mesh. This isn't just like sending a software update to an iPhone.
No, no.
The complex energy trading lessons, the split-second decisions developed in the brutal volatility of the Texas wave pool, are pushed globally via over-the-air updates to the rest of the nodes.
It is decentralized AI training. And the most critical recipient of those lessons is Node 4, located in Kabong, Uganda. In the documents, Node 4 is referred to as the crown jewel.
The crown jewel.
Yeah. It is a massive 7,000-acre eco-industrial park. Instead of livestock waste, Node 4 uses locally grown hemp biomass to generate 11 megawatts of permanent carbon-negative power.
Oh, wow.
Through that federated learning mesh, the AI of Texas is literally teaching the system in Uganda how to perfectly balance its own internal factory power loads while simultaneously selling its excess power to the fragile Ugandan national grid to maximize revenue.
Here's where it gets really interesting to me. They are using a cattle stockyard in Texas as a live classroom to teach an eco-industrial park in Equatorial Africa how to be more financially efficient.
Yeah.
It's literally a global decentralized nervous system.
Yeah.
And that connection is what drives the Oracle revenue. Because they have Node 5 operating in the dry, 115-degree heat of a Texas summer, and Node 4 operating in the thick, humid climate of Uganda, the Rios software is constantly comparing the physical telemetry between the two.
This is the digital twin concept. They are tracking exactly how an industrial Tesla battery or server rack degrades under completely different extreme environmental stressors. They package that highly specific comparative data into what they call resilience ratings.
But who actually buys a resilience rating? Like, why is that valuable?
Think about global agricultural insurers, hardware manufacturers, or massive hedge funds looking to build infrastructure in emerging markets. Because of climate change, historical weather data is becoming useless.
Right, you can't rely on the past anymore.
Exactly. These multi-billion dollar entities need to know exactly how risk-prone their physical investments will be in increasingly harsh, unpredictable environments. DEI sells them this granular predictive data, and because the data is essentially a free byproduct of just running their global network, they sell it at an unbelievable 90% profit margin.
90% margins. It's pure profit. And
right.
The flow of that money is fascinating. The profits generated by the AI in Texas aren't just wired through a traditional bank.
No, of course not.
They are routed cryptographically through an internal mechanism they call the Locutus Ledger. That money flows silently across borders to Node 1 in Chicago, which they call the Urban Citadel, to fund all the human coordination and legal frameworks. It also continuously funds Node 2 in Canada, which serves as the brain where developers are writing the core Rios software.
If we connect this all to the bigger picture, we finally see D-Reticular's ultimate social objective. They call it Humanitarian Aid as a Service, or HAAS, which is the primary mission of Node 6.
Humanitarian Aid as a Service. I have to admit, when I first read that, it sounded incredibly dystopian.
Oh, I know.
Like mashing up cold Silicon Valley software as a service logic with humanitarian relief.
It sounds cynical at first glance, sure, but their underlying argument is profoundly logical. Look at how traditional humanitarian aid works right now. It is incredibly fragile and temporary.
Mm-hmm.
An NGO drops off a diesel generator and a truck full of fuel to a remote village.
Right.
It helps for a month, but eventually the fuel runs out, the parts break, the supply chain fails, and the community is completely dependent again.
It's linear fragility all over again, just in a different form.
Exactly. D-Reticular is attempting to prove that you can replace that fragile, temporary charity with permanent, profitable, self-sustaining infrastructure.
Yeah.
By giving a community the complete sovereign stack, the plasma gasification muscle for endless local power, the autonomous curb car's motion to keep it fed, and the Rios AI mind to manage the economics, you aren't giving them a handout. You are installing a system that allows them to instantly interact with and genuinely profit from the broader global economy.
You are giving them their own automated ATM that feeds itself. You're turning them from passive receivers of aid waiting for a truck into active, sovereign participants who physically own their own infrastructure.
They are proving that true resilience isn't just about hunkering down and surviving a disaster. It's about making that survival financially self-sustaining. If it isn't profitable, it isn't permanent.
So, as we wrap up this deep dive into Project Octagon, I really want to connect all of this back to you listening right now. Whether you are managing a global business supply chain, thinking about how your own local city infrastructure is designed, or honestly just staring in annoyance at your rising monthly electric bill, the paradigm is shifting right under our feet.
Absolutely.
For a century, grid volatility was just a physical risk to be feared and mitigated. But as the Dereticular founder clearly states in these internal documents, volatility is simply unharvested kinetic energy.
That is the core takeaway of this entire blueprint. True security moving forward doesn't mean trusting the aging centralized system to magically hold itself together. It means owning your stack.
Right.
It means having the muscle to generate your own localized power, the motion to control your own logistics, and the mind to manage the economics autonomously.
And if you can build that, if you can achieve island mode, the failing infrastructure around you stops being a threat to your existence and starts becoming an incredible opportunity.
I'd like to leave you with one final thought to mull over, because the implications of this go far beyond Texas and Uganda. We've spent this entire deep dive talking about a single AI agent, the Trader, aggressively negotiating with a centralized legacy grid.
Mm-hmm.
But as Dereticular's technology scales and as Project Octagon expands far beyond its initial 8 nodes, what happens when there are thousands or tens of thousands of these autonomous island mode microgrids?
Wow.
What happens when they completely stop negotiating with a central human authority and start trading and negotiating electricity directly with each other at the speed of light? Will the power grid of the future have no center at all? Will it simply be an infinite, invisible mesh of edge-based AI, endlessly haggling over the price of a spark in the dark?
A completely decentralized, autonomous nervous system of global energy. You know, next time my kitchen lights flicker and the microwave resets, I don't think I'm going to be annoyed anymore. I think I'm just going to look out the window and wonder who exactly is making money off that millisecond of darkness. Thanks so much for joining us on this deep dive into the source material. Keep questioning the systems around you, and we'll catch you next time.